Okay, welcome back. Hope you had a nice coffee break, and hope all the people behind the computers in all over the world, I presume, are back as well. Okay, and next, Oili-Helena Yliöki from the Tampere University will present on At the Crossroads Between Academia and Business, Female Career Trajectories in Biotechnology. Welcome.
Okay, hello. Welcome back from the coffee break. So now we move to Finland from Portugal and to female career experiences in biotechnology. And this is a joint paper with me and Tiina Suopajärvi, and Tiina is sitting there. So, this presentation is based on research that we are doing at the moment in our Nordic Center of Excellence, Nordvid, Beyond the Gender Paradox. It's a Nordforsk-funded three-year center, and the partners are University of Uppsala, which is the coordinator of the center, and then from Norway, Western Norway Research Institute, and then Tampere University. And Tampere University means Tiina, me, and Maria Vehviläinen, and Päivi Korvajärvi. So in our Tampere group, we are focusing on women's career experiences in the fields of bio and health technology in the Tampere region. And we are looking at gendered relations and practices in career building in this field, and more generally in research and innovation work. And we have also an action research component included in our work. So we aim to develop some sort of practices that could support women in working life and their career paths inside and outside of academia. The data we have collected thus far consists of expert interviews with managers within higher education institutions and also among regional authorities and private organizations. This is because we wanted to get an overall view, or more general view, how research and innovation activities are understood and what expectations there are at the regional level authorities. And then our main material consists of career interviews with women who are working in these two fields, health technology and biotechnology. They all have, one doesn't have, but all others have PhD. We wanted to study academic female researchers who have PhD. Their age vary a lot. Also their employment. They work in research and innovation, but not only in universities, but also in public sector, research institutes, in private sector, in companies or spin-off organizations, and in third sector. And in the interviews, we first ask the interviewees to draw a career line in advance. And then in the interview situation, the interview was constructed according to these drawings. It helped to see how the career has been developing and what were the key episodes in their career and how these interviewees themselves saw what are the key and core elements and moves in their career. But in this presentation, I will focus more narrowly. And first, I need to say that these are very tentative findings. This work is very much in progress. We are analyzing the data at the moment. But some tentative findings here. So this presentation, I will focus only on interviews with women working in biotechnology. What we understood quite early was that there is quite big difference between biotechnology and health technology as a field. So this is only biotechnology. There are 18 interviews altogether. Roughly half of these are concern women who are working in the university, and half are women who have moved outside of university. All have some connection to biotechnology at Tampere University. They may have studied there or made their PhD there or been for a while as a postdoc there, but some sort of connection. It varies among the interviewees. And what is biotechnology? It's multidisciplinary or interdisciplinary field which combines research into stem cells and biomaterials. So it's quite new field, dynamic, and also, I would say, fast-growing, progressing, and it has a lot of commercial expectations. When we made these expert interviews, a lot was expected to come out of this field. Somebody said it could be like a new Nokia. We had Nokia company, which was very important in R&D funding in Finland, but it has now dropped. But this biotechnology was anticipated or hoped that it would become like a new Nokia. They were contacted this year, last year, yes, very recent, yes, because this center started in, when did we start? 17, yes. Yeah. And what is also important that this is a female-dominated field. I will come back to this later. So when we see or look at the Tampere University, how biotechnology has been institutionalized there, there's a series of mergers taking place. First we had Regio Cell and Tissue Center, which was established in 2005. It was a very small but independent unit of the university. And this establishment of Regio, it got very much interest in media, a lot of media publicity. It was a sort of a hot area. So much was expected what will come out. But then after 6 years, a new institute was established called Biomeditech, Institute of Biosciences and Medical Technology, and Regia was merged into this new institute. And then 5 years later, there was a merger with the Faculty of Medicine. So now Biomeditech and biotechnology is part of the Faculty of Medicine. Actually, it has Faculty of Medicine and Health Technology, if I remember right. So there have been several mergers, and in each merger, the institutional autonomy of biotechnology has been decreasing. And at the moment, it is much, let's say, like in the shadow of medicine. In the web pages, I was looking yesterday, and so how Biomeditech wants to present itself. It says that we create new knowledge and clinical commercial solutions by combining the engineering and biology efficiently with the modern medicine. And this is done for the benefit of the science, society, and patients. And this last motto is like a key issue in the field. And here are some photos. You can see what these are also from the website of Biomeditech, but it gives some sort of impression what kind of work these female researchers and postdocs are doing. Then this is the setting. Now I come to to the career experiences. How women build careers in this kind of technological field. What we found as a first observation from the data and the interviews was that the crucial phase in the career building is postdoc phase. It came evident in every interview we made. So in biotechnology, postdocs face many demands that need to be fulfilled in order to continue in academia. So there's a necessity of establishing one's own research group and become principal investigator. And this includes and involves a duty to attract funding for the group. So it's a very big change from the position of doctoral student. This means that being a researcher in biotechnology as a PI, it involves constant fundraising in very tight competition. And as a PI, you have little time for hands-on laboratory research because many PIs tell that they are doing fundraising and all sort of administrative work, not anymore working at the laboratory. It also means that there are very few tenure-track positions at the moment in Finnish universities, so they don't only attract funding for the team members, but also for themselves. So PIs are also working on fixed-term insecure employment. They also face the requirement to be mobile, to go abroad at least for 1 year. This is quite standard expectation. So this all means increasing demands for one's CV. You need to get good publications, good grants, good mobility, good laboratories abroad where to go, and good networks. And in order to do this all, it of course leads to working very long hours. And also the last point refers to this organizational insecurity and instability. People have seen that there have been so many organizational restructurings, mergers taking place, and they are thinking what will come next. It's not in this way, the institutional setting is not safe or established. So, actually, what kind of decisions, career decisions, do these female researchers with PhD make? This is just a list. Some stay in academia. Some move outside. Where do they go? Mostly they go to global pharmaceutical companies. This means also that they move from Tampere because these companies, they are global big companies which have only small office in Finland. Finland is just a small market area. And these offices are mainly in Helsinki area, sometimes in Turku, which have big let's say longer traditions in this field. Like one interviewee told that her supervisor or her superior is in Serbia, so it's not even Nordic context that they are working. It's very global. There's also possibility to local startups, but there are not many. It's very time-consuming, very demanding to start a startup in biotechnology because it's very heavily and strictly regulated field. And this is in contrast to health biology or some sort of applications you make, for instance, on mobile phone or something. This is very, very demanding, and there are not many startups in Tampere regions. Some go to hospitals. There are job opportunities there for researchers. And some go to supervisory authorities because this is a very strictly regulated field. There are these supervisory positions in the public sector. And what is also important to note is this feature that there's no coming back. This is that everybody agrees in our material. They say that if you go, if you leave, it's like a final decision. You can come back to university only as an administrator, some sort of management position, but not as an active researcher or PI. So now I have one quote. Why do some women have left academia? This is quite long, but it, in a way, collects many points. Perhaps I just... I'm silent, you can read it. All right. So I have collected some of the reasons in this list. Well, first of all, there is the obvious reason, that is, there's no funding further, so you need to leave. But for others, it's like a real decision. Often, it's said that academia can only offer insecure employment, and they want to have more steady income, not necessarily better salaries, but something that is more, not so risky, not so uncertain. Then they say that there's no possibility for them to move abroad. They have small children or other caring responsibilities, and it's too complicated, too expensive, or whatever reasons. They just cannot have the luxury to go abroad. Then there are interviewees who say that they left academia because their partner, mainly their husband, had a good job in other region, and they wanted to follow her husband, and that meant that they had to leave academia because in that new region there's no university employment possibilities. So it's like a family reason again. And overall, many wanted to have better work-life balance. University is not regarded as a very good place to have balance in your life. For instance, they said that I want to have time for myself, time for children. I like to have hobbies. I want to cook and have good dinners with my friends and whatever. And this is something that if you are working at the university, there's no time for this kind of hobbies or lesser time. As different kind of reason was uncertainty or one's readiness or competence to be a PI. As I said before, there's a radical change from being a doctoral student. As a doctoral student in biotechnology, everything is, in a way, ready for you. The PI attracts the funding, the PI gives the research tasks, and the doctoral students, of course, they may be collaborating, and often they are collaborating with the PI, but still, it's all in PI's responsibility and duty to take care of the team. And now, suddenly, they should take this responsibility for themselves. And it is felt often or sometimes as a very big change and perhaps too big responsibility. So they rather move away. There's also, in some cases, a sense of not belonging to academia, especially because academia is experienced as too competitive, unpleasant atmosphere. It's not a nice place to be working in. There are too many hierarchies between different levels of academics and between academics and students and academics and administration. And also there have been gender discrimination cases. Not necessarily they have not experienced themselves, but they have seen something in the close environment. So they think, I don't want to stay here. It's not the place I want to be. And then some say that I don't have a real passion for science per se. I'm more practical in my orientation. I want to have more direct impact on patients, on society. The rhythm of academic research is too slow in this respect. The outcomes come too slowly. So these are the main reasons to leave academia, what we have found thus far. But some other interviewees, they stay. And some have stayed for a very long time. Why to stay in academia? This is one quote. This is like the main reason that came out in almost every interview among those academics or among those interviewees who had stayed. They really loved their science. Their biotechnology was something they just couldn't leave. Although there were problems in employment conditions and whatever, they still loved it so much. It's like eternal love, somebody said. There's a passion. It's very hot topic. It's always new things coming out. We are like in a very front of science. We are discovering new things. And that's what they are interested in. Then also, what other reasons? Inspiring successful senior academics and role models. As a doctoral students, they had often worked with PIs who have been very inspiring, very good mentors, being good examples how to do it, what it requires to be successful. And they have, in a way, followed their mentors or PIs' work model and also get some networks through him or her. Then there was also a reason what was often referred as coincidence. All happened by coincidence. I didn't really look for a place in academia, but it was like coincidence. And when we talk a little bit more, it became evident that actually these coincidences were not so much coincidence, but perhaps a modest way to say that I was so good. I made an excellent dissertation. I got immediately invitations to go abroad to some very fancy laboratory in Los Angeles or New York or something like that. And they also sometimes receive tailored job offerings at their home university. Suddenly, there was a post open for them. So they were the lucky ones. And obviously also very competent ones and qualified ones. And then they said that as compared to many other occupations, academic work still is independent and it has freedom, academic freedom to a certain extent. It was not only a misery story. And what some of our interviewees emphasized a lot, they said that working in biotechnology in the university, not in, for instance, companies, is responsible, ethically superior. We are helping people and patients. That's our main and ultimate motive. It's not making money, as in, for instance, in pharmaceutical companies. who are of course also helping people and patients, but they have this profit orientation in the background always. There was also a reason to stay. They felt responsibility and care for one's colleagues and research groups, and their research group. One special case was that we had one junior researcher who was not very eager to stay in academia, but she felt that her PI, who had become like a friend to her, they were very close persons, needed her in her laboratory. She was much needed. She got some fixed-term jobs, one after the other. And so she ended up by staying in academia after her dissertation for 7 years before she finally decided to go away, which was what she was always wanting to do. But there was some sort of responsibility for social reasons to stay. And then there were family reasons. Sometimes it was a question of having very long, deep roots in the Tampere area. They wanted to stay in Tampere. That was the prime reasons. I want to be Tampere. There are not many other opportunities in biotechnology, so I stay in academia or in the university. So, then finally some gendered career building in academia, because this gender perspective is central in our center. When we talked about gender in academia, there was like a consensus that gender neutrality prevails. There is no gender bias, only academic merits count in academic careers. But then, at some points in the interviews, there popped up some reasons or some cases which showed us that gender can become an issue at certain points in academic work. And the first point or phase in career is when children are born. And what is important is that starting a family, having children, often takes place at the same time as this postdoc phase in women's career. So this having children, in a way, changed the storyline. Now, it was not only about academic career, it was also about family responsibilities. They started to talk about career and family together. Then gender becomes also visible in conflict situations. And many of our interviewees had some sort of experience of some sort of conflict situation. It might be in recruitments or participation in decision making. They felt that they had not necessarily experienced themselves any conflicts, but they had witnessed that somebody in the laboratory or in the unit had problems, and gender was an issue after all. And then there were also gendered disciplinary hierarchies or biases, and now I come back to this theme in the shadow of medicine in biotechnology. I could say that biotechnology is a female-dominated, it's a new field, it's an interdisciplinary field, and its institutional position is quite weak as compared to medicine, which is male-dominated. Of course, among the students, even doctoral students, there are so many, I would say, larger part is female, but among the top professors, they are quite many are men, and our interviewees talk about men in medicine. That meant something. Men in medicine have all the power. Medicine as a discipline is a very traditional valued discipline. Nobody questions the value of medicine. It has a very strong position in institutional structure in the university, And in a way, it also reproduces the hierarchy that is in hospital structure. There's these different layers of doctors, nurses, and other stuff. And in medicine, this kind of power relations are, in a way, not necessarily visible, perhaps more invisible, but our interviewees had often come across with these structures, especially when there were some recruitments taking place, and what kind of merits really count in career advancement. Who gets the professorship? And this kind of disciplinary hierarchies was also evident among those interviewees who have left academia. For instance, in pharmaceutical companies, they said that certain top positions require PhD in medicine, not in biotechnology. And somebody who had more medical orientation said that only medicine offers an overall picture of human body human body. And these biotechnology people, they are only investigating at the cell level. It's too narrow. You need to be a medical doctor to understand the whole system. So finally, I won't go all this through. There are some dilemmas, like the common talk about flexible career paths and border crossing versus increasingly standardized linear career model in academia. No coming back if you leave. There's fast advancing science like biomedicine and the stiffness of university structures. Although universities are constantly restructuring themselves, constant reforms, it seems that some very deep structures prevail, like the power of medicine. There's a dilemma between interdisciplinary research. This is much expected to do interdisciplinary research, and then discipline-based merits in academic career building and recruitments. There's this dilemma between international mobility and local commitments. And then lastly, a quite sad thing, total commitment to work, which is like the ethos of biotechnology researchers. And somebody then talks about total burnout. That was her outcome of this commitment. And in some other interviews, we found total disregard in recruitments. You had given everything you can to biotechnology, but when there was a recruitment, the reviews saw not so much merit in your achievements. So this is the last very sad point I want to close now. Thank you.
Thank you, Eli-Helena. I'm glad there was also less sad parts in that presentation.
Sorry.
Yeah. Let's continue directly to Thea Vuolanto from Tampere University, Women's Career Paths in Technical Disciplines and the Challenges and Possibilities of a University Merger, a very, very current topic in our higher education policy.
Okay, thank you, and thank you for inviting me here. I'm Thea Vellamo from Tampere University, and I'm going to talk about women in technical disciplines. Of course, this is also ongoing research work, so I'm going to present very early background information, to be honest. Here is the structure of the presentation. Look at some familiar themes of segregation in fields, because as I'm talking about technical education, this is a very important point of view. I'm going to talk about the equality aims at Tampere University of Technology, which is the background of this situation in technical fields, and then analyze these actions that have been taken to promote equality in technical fields. After the summary of results, I will look at the next steps. What new approaches are emerging now with the new merged university? And also maybe have a little bit of a look to these new aims. So this question of what can be done to increase gender equality, specifically in technical education, has been a prevailing one. And I'm doing my research as part of my doctoral dissertation, and this is going to become one of the articles. They all are related to technical identities in the context of Tampere University merger. So most of you probably know about this merger, which is Tampere University of Technology, the University of Tampere that's merged from the beginning of this year, and this university also owns the University of Applied Sciences. But I'm focusing on the university only, so I'm leaving the University of Applied Sciences out of this analysis. And as I said, these articles for my PhD are all related to technical identity and on different levels. So this one is mostly on the individual level, but it has the organizational level as well. I have to say also that my own background is very much intertwined with this research, in the sense that I've been working in both of these universities, and I have been also involved in writing the equality and non-discrimination plan. So I was part of the group that prepared the plan. And at that point, of course, I wasn't quite aware of I was aware of the aims, but I was not aware what kind of results we would get with the specific actions that we defined. And it has been very interesting to look into this from a theoretical perspective. And let's see. So the horizontal and vertical gender segregation in higher education, I'm sure you are very much familiar with this humanistic science divide, and that technical fields science part is highly male-dominated. However, this does not explain all gender segregation in higher education, but there is also this kind of care technical divide which explains gender segregation within the science fields, because not all science fields are equally male-dominated. And increasing equal participation, especially in technical fields, has been an aim, but this also raises the question of how to increase equal participation in all fields, because it cannot be reached just in technical fields only. And if we look at the vertical segregation, of course, the fact that there are very little women working in the highest academic positions in technical fields particularly. So if we look at from the background of this segregation, we can start from the student level. So there is gender segregation in the fields. This is from Tampere University of Technology, and we can see that the total number of women in the whole university, this is female students, is 24%, or this was before the merger, of course. So, but if we look at the different fields, there is clearly a technical care divide visible in these fields. So certain fields have a lot more women, and certain fields are definitely much more male-dominated. So it's not related to the actual curriculum of these fields, but it's more related to the anticipated work that is related to more care and the gender stereotype that emphasizes the nurturing role of women and a supposed natural interest for more care-oriented jobs. So this explains some of this segregation. And if we think of the merger now with the University of Tampere into the new Tampere University, this situation remains the same because there are very little overlapping fields between the two universities. Only ICT is a field that is really presented in both of the universities. There are some natural sciences, which is mathematics, in University of Tampere. So this will remain the same also when the two universities have merged. And if we look at this number, the 24%, the same situation in the University of Tampere was that 67% of the students were female. So it's a very big difference between these two merging institutions. And if we move on to the next phase, to looking at the percentage of male and female academics in different fields at Tampere University. So now the statistics are from the merged university, although this is from last year. It's an interesting way that Vipunen presents, because the merger happened during the academic year, and we wouldn't have the statistics for 2019. But this is still a valid number. So because of the merger, the percentage of women in all research and teaching positions has decreased to 28%. So if we compare to the two merged universities, at TUT it was around 26% of academics were female, and at the University of Tampere about 57%. These are rough because of the numbers and from a little bit from different years. But we can see that due to the merger, the number of women in research and teaching positions decreased significantly. And you can... Yes. So, of course, the total number of people has increased when these are combined together. This is the statistics is from Vipunen and from the national data. So. It is surprising to me as well, but it seems that this is the statistic from the national form. So, of course, whether is this the number of academics from the technical university is higher than that of the University of Tampere, but that's not the case in reality. So I'm not sure if these statistics are quite right in that sense. So that's a good point. It should be checked from the national data. But of course, the merging of the two universities decreases the percentage of women in total in the new university. And it still, as I said, follows the division to the humanities and sciences. And this percentage is from before the two universities merged, so you can see the Tampere University of Technology and the University of Tampere percentage of female professors. So the situation was very different in these two. The Technical University having the lowest percentage of female professors in the Finnish universities, whereas the University of Tampere had quite a much higher percentage, around, say, 38% at that time. This is from 2016, so. But of course, if we think of the difference of all the academic staff, so already there is a big difference between the two universities, but the higher in the hierarchy we go, the less we find women, and that, of course, is especially in the technical university. So with this kind of background, it's quite evident that there is the gender segregation problem in the technical fields and also the problem in the vertical segregation. So what has been done? What is the... This problem has, of course, been acknowledged also already in Tampere University of Technology several years ago, and it has been addressed in the sense that on the university level aims to increase the number of women on all levels, from students to all other levels, all the way to professor level, have been set already several years ago. These have been written in the equality and non-discrimination plans and also have been included to some extent to human resource strategies. So the idea behind the actual steps or the actions that have been defined was that if we increase the number of women already from the beginning, we get more female students, this will eventually automatically lead to having more women in professorship positions and higher in the hierarchy. So this kind of presupposition was behind the aim to increase women on all levels, and then some concrete actions were defined. And next we will look at what they are and what were the results. So one of the things that was defined by the communications department was that we need to market and make women visible in all the materials. So especially when we look at materials that are targeted for young women who are thinking about applying to the university. So there was the idea that we need to have women in all these materials that promote us on the web pages, on other brochures. If we go to fairs, we need to have female and male students there presenting so that the young women who are looking for university position to study in a university can then see that they have these role models as well. So there's the idea that these positive role models are very important. I think this was also mentioned today, that these role models can be very important. There's also research that Lockwood and Kunda have made that these are very important, especially for young women. And so that these role models can be effective, they have to be such that one can identify one's future self with the role model. And female role models are useful examples for women who are attempting to determine their potential future achievement. So if she can make it, I can make it too, this kind of idea. And they also provide important evidence that women can achieve career success despite gender barriers, for example, in technical fields. So for these reasons, it seems like a good idea to have these female role models and in that way increase the number of women students. But there are some issues with this, because although the marketing might have some effect in getting women to apply for technical studies at the technical university, there is a problem that already in upper secondary school, many girls have not studied advanced mathematics, physics, chemistry. So they actually cannot apply to the technical university. So if we target before they apply to bachelor or master studies, we are a little bit late. They have already made their study choices in upper secondary school. So because this was also discovered, and the number of women applicants who have studied advanced mathematics has been rather low. So the idea was to target already earlier, in before upper secondary school choices are made. So there has been these activities targeted for children and girls specifically. And it's also based on the idea, to some extent, of breaking the stereotype threat of this kind of idea that girls that are at risk of conforming to stereotypes about their social group. So especially the ideas that girls are not as capable in science and math or are not interested in these subjects. So this is being targeted through these actions. Of course, this might have an effect on the girls choosing to study science and math, but it might have other beneficial effects so that parents or teachers and schools might also have more views of girls being able to perform in STEM subjects. So these kind of actions have been taken targeted at very early stages or stages before the bachelor or master studies to increase the number of women students. Then there is also some actions related to career targeted after the PhD or during the PhD level maybe also. Because it seems that there are certain things that have been defined that are problematic in these phases. So I looked at a few documents from Tampere University of Technology, the tenure track selection and promotion instructions, and then I also looked at this human resources strategy for researchers. And I discovered that actually that gender was not really visible in the general tenure track selection and promotion instructions and these documents. But this human resource strategy evaluation that was carried out in 2014 had identified some issues related to gender. So they had this evaluation in 2014 where female researchers were interviewed about researchers' working conditions and women's status. And according to them, it was family leaves in particular that caused challenges for advanced in academic career. So this was the only thing that was actually identified in this survey, which is a little bit surprising that they didn't discover anything else. And they also said that based on this survey, no clear means of promoting women's career advancement or adapting family leaves with researcher careers were found. But in the evaluation, they did list some points to actually advance women's career, and one is this 10-year clock stoppage. So it is based on that feedback on the family responsibilities, especially the parental leaves, the family leaves, that if somebody takes a leave of over 3 months based on parenting, these should be excluded from tenure evaluation. But I think this does not take into account other possible reasons for women's career being hindered in the tenure process, which might be, for example, these administrative teaching, these kind of institutional care tasks that seem to accumulate to women more than men, because women tend to be having more administrative and teaching tasks in general. It is hard to say whether this is one of the reasons why their tenure position is not advancing, or is this because their tenure position is not advancing that they choose to focus more on a teaching-oriented career? Then there were these actions defined that we would need to encourage women to apply for tenure. This can be done by stating explicitly that women are encouraged to apply, or it is possible also to contact applicants and encourage them to apply. But of course, this doesn't address the problem of the so-called leaky pipeline, because as I said, that the number of students, the female students, is still relatively, not very high, but it's higher than the number of women in the tenure track. And the women still studying a PhD, the percentage is still higher actually than the percentage of women doing an undergraduate degree. So there's something happening after the PhD, which the pipeline is actually leaking at that point. So encouraging women to apply for tenure is a difficult action point if there are no possible applicants that you could actually encourage to apply. They have already leaked out of the academia. Then there were these actions of favoring women if they have equal qualifications to male applicants, and including women in all tenure-track evaluation panels. So these would be kind of actions where you would expect that this would promote the choice of women into these academic tenure-track positions if there are possibilities to favour women and if there are women in the evaluation panels. However, I think these do not take into account the possibility that there's implicit bias in the evaluation, because there is a lot of research proving that both women and men hold implicit bias attitudes towards women, and even though they might have an explicit attempt to favour gender equality, they might still have implicit bias of associating male with science and technology. There's also the possibility related to implicit bias that they also have negative opinions of women in masculine positions. So there's research showing that women need to be more or have to be better in academic positions to be evaluated as highly as men for their attainments, but also that if these women who succeed in technical fields that are considered masculine, they are less likable, which is also interesting. And it's important to be considered both likable and professional if you want to be selected. So, if we look at some of the results, so these were some of the actions and some of the things that they were designed to address. So what did happen with these aims and these actions that were defined at TUT? Not that much. So there has been very slow increase of female students. Here I have over a 10-year period where the increase has been around 1%. So that's not actually really increase. It has varied a little bit and staying around 20% with a little bit of increase and decrease between the different years also. And it still varies according to different study programs, so not that much has happened. There has been a moderate increase in female doctoral students, so the percentage of female doctoral students is actually higher than that of undergraduate students. And there has been very moderate increase also in female applicants for tenure track. So there, in this time frame from 2015 to 2017, there has been an increase of 1%. So it's still very low. There are some positive aspects. These statistics are actually taken from the non-discrimination plan, the equality and non-discrimination plan. And in those statistics, it was discovered that actually women have lower dropout rates and faster graduation time in the undergraduate programs. I have not discovered a particular reason for this, but it seems that those women who have chosen technical fields tend to finish quite quickly and do not drop out. So I don't know if this actually says that the study culture is not that negatively gendered for them, so it might be a positive result, or I would think there would be a need for more research if you want to make some conclusive analysis of this. But the female PhD students are slower in graduating, and the number of female professors has actually declined in the last years, so it was actually 6% and now it's around 5, or just before the merger. So it's very clear that the pipeline leaks after the PhD degree and women do not get promoted. I know that there was also some layoffs because there was some restructuring in the university, and because the percentage is very small, so even one professor leaving or one professor being laid off would mean a decrease in the percentage. So it's difficult to tell for sure. But this, any of these actions that were defined have not had an effect. So now there remains the question, what next? What can be done? So if the aims have not been met with these actions, should the actions be discontinued? I think not. They have other positive effects, but they are not going to affect the percentage of female professors, for example. And they are quite slow in increasing the number of female students. They might be otherwise useful, but they're not going to have an effect on these aims that they were designed for. So there must be other actions that can be defined. And I think one of the questions has also we should ask is that these actions are really, these are directed to or aimed at the women. So the problem is the women who do not choose technical fields, who do not study mathematics, and who do not proceed in their academic career. In a way, it seems that this has been the point of view. So we need to shift this view and look into some other options. Of course, there is the possibility to look at this individual level of the positive identities available for women in technical fields so that these identities can disrupt the technical culture and can change from the bottom up. But of course, I think the organizational culture and these structures that support segregation and gendered practices are very important. So one of the questions is that will the new merged university form a new organizational culture that may help in changing this gender segregation and the culture in the technical fields? And how can we address the experience of these women on after the PhD on the tenure track? If there is the lack of support, the fewer opportunities and inequality in leadership. So what kind of actions can be defined for the new university? And I'm also a little bit dubious that will the new organizational structure as such make a difference? Because we know that now we have new faculties that have an interdisciplinary structure with technical fields and other fields combined together. So I don't think we can expect that this kind of structural change will automatically result in a cultural change that would be more beneficial for women. But it might be helpful towards creating this kind of new culture. We do still have, for example, a very large faculty of natural technical engineering and natural sciences, so they can stay in their own technical culture if they want to within that faculty. So I think this needs to be addressed on the institutional level. So if we look at some of the new aims, as I said, the new merged university has started only from the beginning of this year. The new university has made a new equality and non-discrimination plan and defined some new aims and new action points of that would be important to address in the new university. So I have listed here some of the points as I took them from the equality and non-discrimination plan, and I have a short summary of some preliminary findings, what I think these new aims can be used to address. So the actions that have been defined, for example, moving obstacles reinforcing gender segregation. How to address this? It might be quite difficult to define the concrete obstacles. So I'm a little bit dubious whether this aim as such will result in a lot of positive effects. And also these obstacles were said that the faculties should define these obstacles and the actual actions. So this is moved from the organizational level to the faculty level, or from the university level to the faculty level. Still, it is possible to favor underrepresented sex in recruiting, and it's important to include both men and women in the evaluation panels. So this expands the issue to the fields where men are underrepresented. For example, education, we have almost the opposite situation. So it's a positive point of view from that side, because in many cases it's important also to look at the underrepresentation of men in certain fields. But of course this doesn't automatically address the increase of women or men in when they are underrepresented, if we take this point that they can be favored or that they need to be included in the evaluation panels. But in the personnel training on recruitment, equality has been now noted as a special issue to be addressed, and ways to identify your own unconscious prejudices are included now, at least on the idea that this should be part of the training for recruitment. So this would be one way of addressing the unintentional bias. There's also the action of encouraging women to apply for tenure. That is still there, the same aim, and it still doesn't address the lack of applicants and the leaky pipeline problem. There is the aim to combine work and private life in a more flexible way and to facilitate this. There were some concrete examples of having more flexible working arrangements or having unpaid leave used for arranging all kinds of care needs and flexibility with the work. But how will this actually benefit women and men remains to be seen. So the idea, at least, is positive, but it remains to be seen how can these issues be addressed. So to conclude very shortly, it seems that the Tampere University of Technology was able to define the problem and had aims to increase the number of women and had these actions, but unfortunately the actions did not target the problem as such. The new Tampere University still identifies the same problem of gender segregation in certain fields, has defined maybe a little bit of better aims addressing some of these issues that came up with the previous Tampere University of Technology. But it still remains to be seen how it will be carried out and will they have an effect in practice. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next we'll move directly on to Terhi Nokkala and Taru Siekkinen on the push and pull factors of leaving academia in Finland, and we'll have a chance to discussion later.
Okay, well, last presentation. I will tell you something about our Academy of Finland funded project and our one research article. So first few words about the project, then something about the background, then findings from the interviews and findings from the survey, and then some conclusions. So our project is the Exiting Academics in Network Knowledge Societies, EANCS. It's funded by the Academy of Finland. And there's two research groups, Finnish Institute for Educational Research and Tampere University. Well, I think the Faculty of Management is the old name in the old new university, but yeah. So, some background about researching this topic. There's a lot of prior research regarding why academics leaving universities, and it has been conceptualized as a research mobility, faculty departure, faculty turnover, faculty retention, academic migration, lecturers turnover, intention, etc. I think these studies have made mainly in the context of the US universities. So a little bit different kind of conceptualizations have used in the Europe and in Finland. In European higher education research, we have been talking about why academic careers are not so attractive anymore, like we have seen in or here in previous presentations. And there's, of course, this different problems with insecure career and decreasing funding and stress and this kind of things. And we have been studying this subject also in Finnish academia and related to early career researchers. And we found out that the reasons are related to insecurity, salary, and the work-related stress. So these are for early career researchers. But in this study, we are concentrating on the academics, so PhDs who have left universities. Okay, so media has been highlighting the problem that have emerged in Finland, so decreasing funding and poor career opportunities in Finland have been acknowledged, and media have brought these things thing up, like why academics are leaving Finland, and even the whole research groups have decided to move working abroad. And of course, this is a big issue if this is a real problem. Confederations of Finnish industries just published one article about this thing, why academics are leaving, and they published some statistics about this subject. And as you can see, people who either have a PhD degree or upper or lower higher educational degree, they have been increasingly leaving Finland until last year, 2017. And the amount of PhDs who have left has increased as well. So this has really been a problem. I don't know what are the statistics in last year. I hope the numbers are decreasing now. So in this paper, we are looking at disciplinary differences. So we have social sciences and engineering and technology. And what is really interesting that discipline influences on the careers of academics inside and outside universities. And we have different kind of perspectives to this aspect. Things influences on this are, for example, what kind of attractive career opportunities academics have outside universities, and salaries inside and outside universities. In technical disciplines and engineering, the salaries outside universities might be much better than inside. And in social for social scientists, difference between salaries outside and inside might not be so great. And in technical fields, the collaboration between university and other sector is more common than in social sciences. So PhDs in technical fields and engineering, they have the networks, so it might be more easy to recruit outside universities. And of course, the potential of commercializing the research results differs, and it influences on how academics are moving to the private sector. And some more broader aspects influences on this matter as well, as in some fields that are expanding in society, there are more opportunities inside and outside universities. And in those fields that are shrinking, there are poor opportunities in both. So I think this is very interesting. And the current atmosphere that not necessarily is very encouraging for social science in general influences in this matter. They have to prove their significance all the time when in technical fields they are perceived to have more impact and they are perceived to have more relevance in society, and therefore they are perceived to be more more significant. So we have two data sets. The interview data included three groups: previous university faculty members and members of university's upper management and upper managers and HR managers of public and private organization who are employing previous academic faculty. And we found that there are pull factors that are related to other sectors. So better salaries, better resources and funding, flexible and supporting management practices, flexibility to conduct one's own work, longer or permanent contracts, possibility to do concrete and practical work. Sorry, the typo. And there's push factors of academic sector, and they are poor salary, lack of research and poor funding, bureaucracy and rigid management practices, short contracts, fierce competition of resources and positions, poor working climate, and university performance measurement practices. So there's nothing really new. I think that these things are all acknowledged quite well, that what are the problems in the academic sector and why people might feel that other sectors are more attractive places to work. And then there were also these individual factors, so lack of interest in research and or teaching, unwillingness to tolerate uncertainty, so short contracts, unwillingness to compete on positions, and personal preferences. So people want to try something else. So in here, we didn't do difference between social sciences and technical field and engineering. But in the survey data, we picked up those academics who have really left the universities and they have gone in other sectors to work. So these are PhDs, and the amount of those who have left is not so big, so 127 overall, and 67 in engineering and technology, and 60 in social sciences. So in the field of engineering and technology, PhDs were working more common in a private or state-owned company, and in social sciences they were employed by a research institute or University of Applied Sciences and or self-employed. So in this table, we can see some of the pull factors of the Finnish universities. So people were mentioning the things that that are pulling them like back to universities that they were perceived to be positive. So independence related to university work, academic freedom, interest towards work duties, good geographical location of the university, good work atmosphere, possibilities to do meaningful work, chances to combine work and family life, versatile work duties, and good amount of work, and the personal reasons. So those were the factors that were mentioned most often. And there were some differences related to these two fields that we are considering in this paper. And so people who were working in engineering and technology, they felt more often that independence related to work is very important factor, as well as versatile work duties and good amount of work. So the amount of respondents are not so big, so we can't really find statistical significance. But some hints of differences, we can say they are. So this can be related to the fact that in engineering and technology, the working environment might be more strict if they go outside, or the working duties are not so versatile outside universities, and they might have to work longer hours outside universities. And then PhDs mentioned some push factors of Finnish universities that are pushing academics outside from the universities. So the first one is really mentioned many times before, so uncertain research funding at the university. And the second one is poor opportunities to advance in one's career. And then there is better job prospects elsewhere. And the fourth one is the inflexible administrative practices at the university. And then there were personal reasons. And also low salary was quite often mentioned. So there were differences between these two fields. So it seems like in engineering and technology, there can be better career prospects outside the universities. So like in the field of biotechnology, it's interesting that they really have the choice. So they are doing the choice whether they are leaving or staying. But some social scientists may not have a choice at all. There are not opportunities for academic career outside university. Some conclusions, though. So in overall, PhDs value academic freedom and versatile working tasks in universities, and especially in engineering and technical fields, the independence to do academic work were perceived very significant pull factor, and that might be related to the nature of work outside universities. On the other hand, in the field of technology and technology firms, there can be really low hierarchies. So I think that this needs more study to do that. What are really the reasons behind this? Uncertain funding is the most important push factor in both of the fields. And in addition, the insecure career prospects and inflexible administrative practices were perceived as significant push factors, and especially in the fields of technical field and engineering more than in social sciences. And social scientists highlight the personal reasons, and we were thinking, is this related to the gender aspect? That, but we have to consider if there are more differences between gender in this matter. So interesting is that do academics leave because they want to leave or because they have to leave? So what are the opportunities outside universities? Do they really have a choice? And this differences between these two fields is very important. And like in previous slide, I said that if some field is like rising in the society, that means that it's going well inside the university as well. But if it's like a field that it's not so popular overall in society, so it's like going down in universities as well. So it's like the movement in that sense. Yes, thank you. This was my last slide. So then we can go to the discussion. So there's three papers now.
Thank you, Taru and Terhi. Yes, now we have about half an hour for discussion on all the afternoon papers that we heard. Terhi.
Okay, thank you. I have sort of a question or a comment or sort of a pondering maybe for Oili-Helena and Thea. I'm not quite sure whether I can formulate this as a sort of single question. Basically, a lot of the things that you highlight are sort of we're familiar with in the sense that the data that Taro presented brings up very similar ideas about sort of why women, for example, or people in general sort of choose to leave academia or choose to leave academic careers. And there's plenty of previous research that says more or less the same. So we can conclude that your research kind of recognizes this same pressing issue in a way. One thing that I found sort of really interesting in Oili-Helena's paper was this sort of this notion of the disciplinary power differences and sort of a weaker institutionalized position for biotechnology compared to medicine and the link that has to gender issues. And in a sort of similar vein, perhaps the most interesting part there of what your in your presentation was this sort of finding that that in the course of this 12 years that you had, there was an increase of women in at the doctoral degree stage, and sort of, I wonder whether both of these sort of this gendered aspect of both of these is quite interesting because there in your paper, what sort of occurred to me was that perhaps one of the reasons is that the amount of women has to some extent increased in that period of time at the doctoral degree stage is that actually academia has become less interesting place to work. So the percentage of women goes up when the sort of general evaluation of with the general devaluation of academia, of academic careers. And in the same vein, my sort of thinking was, Oili-Helena and Dina, in your paper, was basically sort of which is the chicken and which is the egg in terms of the power difference between and weak institutional position between these two disciplines? Or is it sort of like they are weaker or it's considered less of a discipline because of the stronger or like this female dominance? Or is it that you know, it has a that you know, it has more women because it has a weaker position. So, like, you know, this sort of intermingling of gender and sort of hierarchies or what's being valued in the university or what's being valued in society. I would invite your reflection on this.
Can I start with a short comment? I think you are on point with that, and I had similar feelings when I heard this idea that is the academic career somehow deglorified. So that might mean now it's more available for women in that sense. And also an interesting point was the discussion about the medicine aspect, because medical studies are feminized already. So most of the students who want to become medical doctors are actually women nowadays, but it doesn't apply to the higher levels, to the research part. So I think there are very many interesting points in that. And I thought at some point also that it's interesting that this biomedical field discipline is female dominated, but still it seems that the women suffer with some of the same problems as the women in the male dominated fields, because I thought this might be more female friendly because it's female dominated in the sense. But maybe there are some more comments.
Yes, I think Terhi, that you are absolutely right. It's like an intersection of gender and discipline. Both are important. It's very difficult to say which comes first, which comes second. In terms of this biotechnology in Tampere, and it was a unique place in Finland, it started in Tampere. It was first one person, one female, and then was a group of four leading biotechnology women who started the whole business. And then the birth was already totally female, and it was a new field. So it created a sort of, how would I say, combination that was very interesting, because in a way they created an atmosphere. They were very friendly, intimate climate there. It was like women-friendly environment to be there. At the early stage, the young women who came there to work there, they really loved to be there. They said that they have parties there. They have all common activities outside work. They are like a big family, and it was a great time for everybody. But then there came the first merger and the next one, and it became more bigger and bigger, and the structures became evident, and all these pressures that were first not at all there. There was different free space for different kind of organization, and then it little by little changed. And I guess it was because of both of these things, discipline, new discipline, and of course possibly because they didn't create big commercial success as was the super expectation that something would come out so quickly that it could be like a new Nokia or something. But of course there are long processes to study, and it didn't. They had all kinds of commercial outputs, but it was not that big as was expected, perhaps, by some at least. And so it was like all traditional disciplines and new ones with female domination. It was difficult combination. But we need to think that further, because it was we have just discovered this. I think it's quite interesting case.
Yeah, maybe not as an answer to your question, but I think this case is really interesting because of all the multidisciplinarity discourses that are going on even now, that we should do more and more these multi-inter-transdisciplinarity things, that this thing that started with Regea in Tampere, that they already started some 15 years ago, and sort of follow the process of what has happened to that in relation to the academic institution that is so sort of stiff and difficult to change. So it's sort of it gives us a good perspective towards the future as well. If one of us is doing the multidisciplinary stuff and what it can mean in terms of career, yeah. And it's also, we asked in the interviews these women that why is this field so female dominated? Why do you think? And they really couldn't, because they said that it's very technical, and it's very much into sort of medicine and all sorts of things that could maybe sort of think that could allure also men to join in. But for some reasons, men, they said that men tend to go to these more established fields in medicine and not this new sort of thing. So yeah, it's a really interesting case, and I'm happy that we run into it and we'll think about this intersections for sure.
Thank you. I would like to ask all of the presenters very simple question, easy to answer, I'm pretty sure. What do you see are the main continuities and discontinuities in academic profession and academic work?
Who would like to start?
Teresa?
Okay, it's actually a very easy question indeed. Now, it's quite complicated to answer that. Obviously, I think there are some continuities, and they are mainly focused on teaching. Teaching is still, although it is undervalued in performance assessment and in institutional outputs and everything, I think it's still a very important role of academics, and it's one of the main continuities. They really praise their work as teachers. What has changed is mainly the discontinuities, in my view, are mainly related with the working conditions, the work environment, with a lot of competition, with less secure positions, and actually with the way knowledge is produced and the way teaching and research are related. They are increasingly more less and less related, because the focus is increasingly more on research, I think, in general terms.
Rosemary? I think it's difficult, because I think some things are sort of in the process of change. So, I mean, I guess there's still some independence left. There's not a lot, but compared to, say, being a lawyer, where every 5 minutes you have to write down exactly what you're doing because somebody has to be charged for it, then compared to some professions, I think there is still some independence. There's also some flexibility, although now it's like the flexibility to when do you work your 14-hour day. You know, you can get up very early or you can stay up very late, or you can do both at different days. So I think some of those things are still there. And I guess the core of what you do is still, for a lot of people, is teaching and research. But it's partly that, yes, different importance is attached to them. And also, there isn't any longer the assumption that you just know how to teach in a lot of systems, because people are actually being taught to teach and taught to supervise, which wasn't there before. I guess what's gone, I think one thing that's gone is discretion, because I think for a long time when you were kind of assessing students, there was an element of discretion, and now it's all governed by rules, and you can't make kind of, you know, well, that one doesn't look right, let's change it. And some ways that's a bad thing, some ways it's a good thing. I think what's also gone is any kind of notion of life-work balance, but maybe it wasn't that present before. And I think the other thing that's gone is the conditions under which people occupy academic work, particularly in relation to salaries and the notion of kind of whether you've got a secure job. I mean, you know, in some systems, 50% of the labour force is actually temporary. And even for those who do get salaries, they're not in many systems that good compared to many other kinds of forms of labour. So I think those are quite significant changes.
All right. From the point of our empirical research, I would say that what has not changed, what has remained the same, is like the traditional values or traditional appeal of the university. I mean, freedom, independence, and love for science or passion for doing research. There are still people who are eager to commit themselves in spite of some, well, they might be quite bad situations where they are doing their research, but they want to do it. So I would say the traditions are strong in a way, although we don't necessarily see them because they are somewhere deeper in our everyday practices. We don't think about how our own work is related to some basic values, but I would say that when we reflect our activities and daily work manners, there often is some sort of value element or even scientific norms. This is also linked with power or disciplines. I was astonished to see that still these disciplines have so strong role, not only in recruitments, when single discipline-based merits are very much appreciated, at least in our data, but also people tended to have disciplinary identities, consider themselves as representatives or part of some disciplinary or science community. So this kind of community thing, not just a competition and individual achievements, but they want to belong to some community. But what is different? Of course, these everyday, daily circumstances and increasing, I would say, these increasing metrics we are experiencing, our outputs are evaluated and assessed more in more standardized ways, and we have to some extent, I think, internalized these criteria and begin to see ourselves and our fellow colleagues according to these metrics. So that at least is one thing that has been changed.
Yeah, well, to my mind, only I was thinking on individual level also, if we think of careers and what kind of continuities and discontinuities there are. So there are, like Oily Helena already told, and also Thea, about this, what happens at what point, like when are the hierarchies, for instance, experienced, and when they are sort of invisible, when they become very sort of concrete, embodied experiences, and in that way, it's just a, I don't have answer what are the continuities and discontinuities, but there are changes along the way, and those are also the things in relation to this bigger like cultural and social things that we should look at and reflect on.
I think one of the discontinuities definitely is on the postdoctoral level, at least that seems to be for women's careers and apparently also other careers, for example, what we heard today about Portugal, and I think that is also applies to the technical fields particularly, that is the stage which is very crucial to whether women continue in academia. So I think at least that is a clear point. But why does it happen is another question, which I think still needs quite a lot of... We've heard about the push and the pull factors and those, but how much they affect, especially from a gendered perspective. So I think that is still something that needs to be looked into.
if I reflect only this this study that I presented, I think that disciplinary differences are the very significant aspect of continuities in academic work. But if we think like more wide this subject, I think that hybrid roles in academic work, they are something new that that we are combining more and more these like academic roles and managerial roles and also the entrepreneurial roles in our work. So scientific or knowledge transfer and marketizing and that kind of tasks and more societal impact, for example, we have to constantly like disseminate our results also outside universities. So there are many things are happening, but I think that many continuities as well. But what's the result? That's important question for higher education. Like, what's really the result after all?
And I think by now almost everything has been said, or a lot of things have been said, but another sort of layer at which I think there is both a sort of continuity and discontinuity is sort of if we think of, we've talked a lot about, say, precarization, but precarity has always been there, but I think it has maybe changed shape in a way. Same thing for things like hierarchies. Hierarchies have already always been there. It's just that it's changed shape in a way, and the sort of layers of hierarchy have kind of realigned themselves in a way. And I think, for example, precarity has sort of extended further than now perhaps was the case before. But that doesn't mean that there wasn't always precarity of sorts. And another question I was thinking about is in which we can perhaps see both continuity and discontinuity is a level at which sort of if we say that teaching is a constant, in a way teaching is one of the key tasks, and then research is another constant, even though it's perhaps been emphasized more. Then if we think of what other things do sort of academics do, and I think this is where we see both a continuity and a change, in that there is, the academics always did also other things than research and teaching. They did this sort of public intellectual work, and this sort of this idea of an academic as an uomo universale that is capable of doing pretty much anything. I think it's in that track or that mission where we also see a discontinuity, in a sense that that academics are still expected to do other things, but what those other things are and the sort of personal freedom to define what those other things are, I think, has perhaps changed or diminished.
Thank you. Jussi, do you want to answer your own question too?
I asked this question because I don't know the answer, and I still think that it's one of the core questions when we think about what seems to be changing and what is actually changing, and I think that one of the tyrannies of the present is that we tend to think that more things are changing than they actually are. So if I look it from a very from a high level of abstraction, I think that the basic tasks of universities have or for academics have not changed. Teaching and research, third mission, or public intellectual activities, or contributing to the public, they have pretty much remained, but how they are conducted is changing. Definitely the working conditions for everybody working in academia, they are changing. And now I see how the universities deal with the with the basic tasks or the social institution of higher education and the changing financial and economic and societal environment. So this is where we see, I think that in work relations with universities, we see changes. And yes, so I think that the universities, well, no, I don't have any more ideas about that. But basic things have not changed, but how they are done is very, very different. And I think that maybe this makes us more puzzled than we should be.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions at this stage?
Okay.
Looks like we are ready to wrap up.
Yeah, and thank you very much for putting. I think this issue is very important regarding the whole future of higher education and academic work and academic careers. And we will continue the discussions in various arenas. So thank you, you all who are behind your own computers, and thank you all who are here.